Says, "What is real?" asked the rabbit one day when they were lying side by side near the nursery fender before Nana came in to tidy the room. "Does it mean having things buzz inside you and a stick-out handle?" "Real isn't how you are made," said the skin horse. "It's a thing that happens to you when a child loves you for a long, long time, not just to play with, but really loves you. Then you become real." "Does it hurt?" asked the rabbit. "Sometimes," said the skin horse, for he was always truthful. "When you are real, you don't mind being hurt." "Does it happen all at once, like being wound up?" he asked. "Or bit by bit?" "It doesn't happen all at once," said the skin horse. "You become. It takes a long time. That's why it doesn't often happen to people who break easily, or have sharp edges, or have to be carefully kept. Generally, by the time you are real, most of your hair has been loved off, your eyes drop out, and you get loose in the joints and very shabby. But these things don't matter at all, because once you are real, you can't be ugly, except to people who don't understand." "I suppose you are real," said the rabbit. And then he wished he'd not said it, for he thought the skin horse might be sensitive. But the skin horse only smiled. "The boy's uncle made me real," he said. "That was a great many years ago. But once you are real, you can't become unreal again. It lasts for always." The rabbit sighed. He thought it would be a long time before this magic called real happened to him. He longed to become real, to know what it felt like, and yet the idea of growing shabby and losing his eyes and whiskers was rather sad. He wished that he could become it without these uncomfortable things happening to him. Just a little bit from Marjorie Williams there. So, we talked about thoughts the other day, and that all you're ever really dealing with is a thought. How can you change a thought?
Think of something else.
Think of something else. Would you ever want to change a thought? Her camera's bad.
Read Proverbs.
Read Proverbs. That changes thoughts. Why would you want to change a thought?
Because as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
One thing that I, easy way that I learned it to really put me in touch with, is this what I really want, was I'd write down what I'd want, and then I'd write all the reasons why I can't have it.
Oh.
Then write down, next to the reasons that you can't have it, the reasons that you can. So I did this with my weight, and I had my dream built. I wrote out everything, what my body was going to look like and how much I was going to weigh and how I was going to feel and what I could run and jump and play with my children, and that I was healthy and felt good and nurtured my body with good foods. And then I wrote all these reasons why I haven't been that way. And so then I do the flip side, and there were statements like, "I love myself." There were statements like, "I deserve to be thin." "I deserve to be beautiful." Things like that. And then you cut the page in half and you burn the ones that you said you can't.
Good.
And then you read the other ones over and over and over again. Even if you don't believe them. Like I said, fake it till you make it. So you create the positive affirmation is what that, you know, that's what people call that, as an affirmation. It's kind of a word that gets sometimes a little abused now and then. And you can do that for now and the future. In the Bible it says to give thanks for what you have, as if you already have it. And so you're not, you know, saying, "Well, I don't have that yet, so I don't want to dream for it. I don't want to," you know, that's acting like I'm being snobby and I'm wanting more and more and more. But it says too, there's always abundance, and God gives us enough on this earth for everything that we need.
That's the key word.
Or that we want.
No, he doesn't say that.
I didn't bring my Bible, but I found the verse the other day, and that And that God wishes us to have all pleasures too. You know, the pleasures are not denied us because we are here on this earth to experience on this plane. But I did pull that one out. In fact, it was the first one I read when I came to Holden, and I was real grateful I found it. So we talked a little about accountability and thinking about what we want. How many people have had instances where they've thought something's going to happen and it does, good or bad? So a few of us were talking the other day out on the green about, you know, I might think that this bus might go off the edge, and so it's like, nope, this bus is on the road. So why, you know, it's like, let's just deny that thought and bring back in the positive. So reasons why. Why would the options like of blaming, like I said, if I'm not going to own that it's my idea, I can blame others. We talked about that, and you were never going to come back and rescue me if I'm the one that said it was your fault. And the other one is blaming God. How many people have wanted to blame God or have blamed God for illness, sickness, tragedy, my life, whatever? Or, you know, blame kind of brings up a negative thing. I don't think we blame him for the goodness in our life. And, well, God's a good scapegoat because, you know, he's not really here to defend himself. And but what does it really get us? You know, does it really get us an answer? Does it really get us the answer that we want? Probably the biggest one is blaming yourself. And I don't think any of us are above that. I think we've all blamed ourselves for something. I don't do guilt anymore. It's kind of nice not to do guilt. Another one is should. How many should on ourselves on a daily basis? I should have exercised. I should have walked a little slower yesterday. I should have whatever. You can change. Should deals with the past, and we don't have the past. The past is already gone. Should deals with blame. Who are you blaming?
You.
Yuck. A good affirmation is to just try to get the word should out of your vocabulary. You can replace it with I chose to or I chose not to, or you can replace it with I could, because that's talking about your next choice to. Because should's over. You can't choose to do it again because you missed it yesterday. You can choose to do it for today, you can choose to do it for tomorrow. But the more we beat up on ourselves, the more we aren't loving ourselves, if we're in blame or if we're in guilt. Same thing. So our survey said that you guys were going to live to be 85 to 110, or a few of you contemplated and your ink ran out of, pen ran out of ink and didn't, you just left it blank. And one person put any day soon, and I hope that that person has increased their vision by what they've attained here at Holden. That's, you know, that's what's really sad is, you know, do we have a will to live? Do we want to live? Why are we here? I believe if I'm on this earth, my journey is love. And that if we are alive, we are able to love. I remember hearing a story of a man laying in a hospital bed, unable to do anything else. And why was he alive? And a person told him, or I forget how the story went, but that he was still alive, he was still capable of loving. And I believe that's why we're here. And that's how we learn. So, about 50% said that they could see themselves at that age that they predicted. Has anybody done any work with that? Have you looked ahead and seen yourself in the future at a certain age doing something fun and exciting? Or dying? Anybody looked ahead? Negative or positive? Okay. So I believe if you're going to look ahead negative, like to being a burden to your children, being in a nursing home, not being able to do whatever, I believe you can create that. I believe you can also change that path right now and create the positive. Everybody close your eyes just for a minute and get a picture of what you look like at this age that you put down, or a new age if you've changed your mind, that's possible too. And just picture what your body looks like. Picture what you're doing. Where you are. Who's around you. you're happy or sad. Remember, it's just a thought, and you can create it to look any way you'd like it to be. Okay, you can come back now. One of the things about creating and like how we handle things with a choice, I wanted to share an incident that I had. I told you that I created this weight loss thing, and I guess I might not have. I did a class on prosperity, and part of the process was what I just explained about writing down why I couldn't have my thin body. And it didn't say how you were going to get it. But yet, it's like I'm putting all this stuff out there. I put it on a repeating tape. I put what my picture looked like and all my positive affirmations on a repeating tape, which you can get at Radio Shack. They go in answering machines, and you get a repeating tape, different lengths. And it'll just be a continuous play. And I put it on when I go to bed at night until I accidentally woke up and still heard it. And I go hit the tape player and shut it off. And I listened to it first thing in the morning. And I did that for about 2 weeks. And I'm not real good at keeping committed to doing things like that for a long period of time. This was in June. And I went ahead along in my life, and I knew I wasn't going to do Weight Watchers again. I lost 82 pounds with Weight Watchers, and I gained it back after my parents died, because I love to feed my emotions. And I knew that wasn't my step. And I looked at a few other weight loss programs, and I thought, you know, it'd just be nice to just fall. But it didn't do that either. So in January, I got off work early. I was going to go out and watch some people do clogging out at the Grange. And so we weren't very busy, and the hospital loves to save money by sending me home early. And so I thought, I'll leave a little early, and it's 2 o'clock. I can get out there and watch. I went home, changed my clothes, headed downtown. I was going 30 miles an hour on the one-way street that's 30 miles an hour. And I was hitting the lights just as they turned green, you know. And they were all turning green for me. And I hit this green light, and this guy ran the red light, and smash, I hit him.
Oh.
It's like, I was supposed to keep working today. I wasn't supposed to go watch them clog. So I did about $3,000 worth of damage to my car. I wrenched my neck. I had my seatbelt on, so the rest of my body was pretty safe. But it was very interesting, because this was the first big thing like this that had happened to me in a long time that I knew that I could choose how I wanted to react. And that's really powerful when I don't just go into my emotional stuff, but I kind of think about, okay, I'm okay. I wonder if the person in the other car is okay. Or I could get out and say, I'm going to go watch them clogging, on and on and on, you know, which I could have done before. I'm sure I probably did that before in a previous accident. You know, semi-truck, didn't you see me pulling out? Because a semi hit me once. But I could have moved into my anger and blame. And I don't, you know, he did run the red light, and I did hit him. And it's like, you know, I've ran red lights and been lucky. It's like, oh, there was a stop sign there. Looked out on that one. Thanks for guiding me through, you know. But it's like, I'm not going to blame him. You know, he's in just as much pain right now as I am. So we got out, and we assessed the damage, and somebody called the police, and we moved over to the parking lot. And we talked, and he was just getting ready to go out to Desert Storm. And he was a young boy driving his parents' car, and in his uniform even. And so we shared a lot. We shared a lot about the war and how I felt. And I was pretty shook. You know, I could feel my body was kind of in shock. And the police came, and I'm sure he thought, you know, that I was a real rare bird because of how I was discussing with this kid that just ran my red light, you know, and I wasn't fanatical and blaming and angry. And I made it through that one, and I went home, and I was in shock for a few days, and I cried, and I grieved over the loss of my car. I grieved over the loss of my health, which we'll discuss that a little more tomorrow, the little things that we need to cry about and deal with. But I felt really good about how I handled that situation. So anyway, that was one part of the story. Then come about August, September, I decided I was ready to lose weight. I had heard about this liquid diet program. I just made a settlement with the insurance company, and I could have probably gotten enough money to pay for my whole thing. And I said, no, I'm not into lawsuits. I'm a nurse. I don't believe that that's how people should make money. I attracted the accident, and you're paying for my chiropractor bills. And he says, well, we'll give you $1,500. And it's like, oh, okay, I probably could have gotten $3,000 if I would have asked, but I didn't. Plus, they paid for my chiropractor bills for the next 6 months. Well, I now had the money to do this program. So it's kind of how the universe works and how God works through whatever channels, whether they be negative or positive. I attracted the money that I needed to do this weight loss program, and I also attracted my dream within a year of when I made that first commitment and my dream and wrote it down on paper and put it into my mind. So hindsight's always 100%. You know, you look back and you think, wow, I really did this. You read Louisa's book and you look up illnesses and different things and you say, it's like, oh yeah. It's always those little things that kind of clue you in to, is there more? Is there more that I can be creating in my life? So I guess that's just the thought I want to leave with you on that, is that what is, all we've got is today. And those thoughts can create whatever you want.
Excuse me, did you have a car then?
Oh, their insurance company paid for the repair of my car.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that was good.
But still, you know, it's losing it. Oh yeah, they paid that too. So that kid running the red light cost their insurance company about close to $5,000.
Yeah, I was going to say, couldn't get back for $1,500.
What would you like it to say on your tombstone?
She meant well.
What are some other ones? Anybody thought about it?
I think that's it.
Yeah, we need to add that one to contest.
She sure had fun.
She sure had fun. Okay. Anybody else? What would you like it to read on your tombstone?
Wish I could have had more.
I do too.
Wish I could have had more. What's that?
Being a sound mind, I blew it all.
Yeah. Okay. How about made it through? Or live the richest, fullest life possible. That's your choice. You can make it through, or you can live the richest, fullest life possible, which is my goal. So I wanted to say a little bit about the surgery stuff. I missed half of my list here. Things to do then. If you're going into the hospital for surgery, or you end up in the hospital, you weren't quite counting on it, but it worked out that way. The main things you want to do is keep your body in tune, just like Karen's been teaching. Work those legs while you're laying in bed. Your arms can do lots and lots while you're doing things. Don't get lazy. Be up and walking. The bowel works because it's stimulated too. If it's just laying, you're just laying there and you're not burning a lot of calories, it says, I don't have to digest much today, thank you, even though you haven't been feeding me. But your doctor's going to say, walk, 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 because that's what's going to get this working, get you eating, and get you home. Clear your mind of home stuff. If you know you're going into the hospital, try to clear up as much as you can at home so you can just be in the hospital and healing and not being distracted by, you know, things that you wished you could have handled before you went in. Don't diet before you go into the hospital. Oh, the doctor's going to see me fat. I'm going to have to get on the scales. I know the nurse is going to weigh me. Don't go on a, you know, oh, I'm going to eat the banana diet this week. And don't diet before you come in. Eat healthy foods. And a lot of times you might be on a diet that the doctor puts you on. You don't feel like it's real healthy, like Jell-O and broth, things like that. And keep hydrated. As we talked about drinking water, the more you drink, the more your body will trust that you're going to give it enough. If our bodies are 96 to 98% water, we're pretty stagnant pools if we're not drinking. If you just think about it that way. And we're washing through, we're rinsing through our body and replacing. You know those cells, remember back in school, those little cells, and they're working all the time, and they've got excrements and things that you need to flush out of your body. So you're not only replacing the fresh water, you're rinsing out the old stuff. And that stuff can make you sick too. You know, you get rid of stuff four ways actually in your body, probably more. But either with urine or feces and tears, which we'll talk about tomorrow, And then you've got sweat. And if you just, if you limit it, your body's going to have to figure out other ways to get stuff out of it. So if you drink 6 to 8 glasses of water a day, the only reason you wouldn't do that if your doctor advised you not to drink that much, if you had kidney failure and you were on a dialysis machine. There should be no other reason to not drink that much water a day. How many people retain fluid? How much water do you drink a day when you're retaining fluid? If I retain fluid, I'm not going to drink because my feet will swell.
They swell more if you don't drink.
Because your body's not trusting that you're going to give it enough. And so it's hanging on to everything it's got. And it's going to pack it away in the gravity places, which are your ankles and your feet and your hands. So if you trust, if your body trusts you, and you feed it and you nourish it and you give it enough water, it becomes more balanced. Same thing with dieting. How many people have dieted and gained weight? Or lost 5 pounds and gained 15 the day they went off? Same thing. Your body's not trusting that you're going to give it enough nutrition. And that's why a lot of times you have that rebound on a diet. Because your body's not trusting you because you starved it. You went on an improper diet. You weren't eating a balanced amount of food. And it goes into a starvation hang on to mode of, I'm not going to let any of this go because I might starve to death. Speaking of starving, how many people have eaten more food in a day here than they do at home normally? How many people are worried about being hungry tonight? See what our minds are doing because they told us we're only getting one carbohydrate tonight?
No, because we're going to have all the toppings for it.
You should see all the peanut butter sandwiches that went out of
lunch. I know. And like I said, you know, it's just a thought. You know, how many of us could go to bed, could not eat anymore the rest of the day, and go to bed probably not being that uncomfortable, and wake up and have a great breakfast in the morning? And, you know, a good rebellion is if we all skipped dinner tonight.
It'll be a long line for ice cream cones tonight.
Yeah.
But, you know, on the other hand, I think your mind is at ease if it knows it doesn't have to starve. It's just like the painkillers. You know, the dentist, the doctor always want to give you all these painkillers ahead of time. And what do you do if you get the prescription and you know that if you have insufferable pain, you have help at hand, but you don't have to take it? And I find I don't have to even use my prescriptions. Mm-hmm. But I always get the thing just in case because
just
I don't want to be in mortal pain and the, you know, pharmacy is closed.
Next time you get a pain pill prescription, how many of you gotten pain pill prescriptions and they give you at least 25, 30 pills and you use 2? You can tell your pharmacist, just give me 5. You won't be able to go back and get the other 20 without a new prescription, but chances are you may not need it either. Or if you've got somebody, like you said, that you could send to the pharmacy and get it, or if you're afraid the pharmacy's going to be closed and you want to have them on hand, you can just get a partial prescription. So I tell my patients that all the time, and the smart doctors are getting better with it because they're putting down, you know, just 10 pills, but some of them still put 30. And I wonder, you know, the pharmacy company helps send them to school and they're... We had one pediatrician that would get almost take our... We had a nurse who said, please don't give Dr. So-and-so's babies anything but Enfamil formula, the headless nurse. Because Mead Johnson sent him to school. And he was almost to retirement at that time, and he was still swearing on Enfamil formula. Not that one was better than the other, but... It was like, they have their reasons for promoting whatever they're promoting too. And it may be from their heart and it may be not.
But it doesn't hurt to be prepared so that you can make a decision.
Right.
It doesn't mean you
it's
have
still
to
your
do
choice,
it.
Right. And you can save a little money. So who's the boss? You are the doctor. The 25% of the people said the doctor was. How many of you have changed their mind? Who's the boss? You or the doctor? Nobody wants to admit they were the doctor. 75% said me, myself, or I. I love that because like I wrote down me, and then every time it came up again, I underlined it. And it was me, myself, or I am. And I thought, me, myself, and I. I've heard that before. So the doctor is your consult, and you make the choices and the decisions and the choices, and he advises. And that's why second opinions are great, third opinions are great. If you don't get the answers you need, you go on. So hopefully we'll change opinions on that a little bit. If you want to give your life to the doctor, that's fine. If he screws up, you can blame him, then you can sue him, then you have money for the rest of your life. Is that really how you want to live your life?
Well,
Doesn't give me a lot of pleasure. So, medicines. We just finished Tuesday. Now we're on to medicines. So one thing I didn't want to mention, I didn't mention all these books. And just the titles of them. I found a couple more in my closet that I didn't bring over the other day. The Self-Healing Personality, Why Some People Achieve Health and Others Succumb, by Carl Simonton and NIC. Your Body Believes Every Word You Say. Oh, and Love Your Disease is there. The Physician Within, The Healing Journey, which is the Simonton Center Program for Achieving Physical, Mental, and Spiritual Health, which I still believe is you've got to have all three. Be Sick Well, How to Be Healthy with a Chronic Illness. Unlimited Health, and Diagnosing Your Doctor. That one jumped right out at me. Choosing the doctor that you want. And, you know, they do this a lot with choosing your obstetrician and your pediatrician when you're going in and have babies. But, you know, you guys ought to choose your doctor, too. And one thing in here I ran across today, it said, choose a doctor that is the same age or near your age so you can grow old together. I thought, oh, that's cute.
Who's the author of that?
Which? Diagnosing Your Doctor. Arthur R. Pell, P-E-L-L, and he's a PhD. Says, a straightforward guide to asking the right questions and getting the health care you deserve. You know, we are in the United States of America, which has, you know, got one of the most fantastic health care systems in the world. And we'll only know when time comes how that's going to change. But when I heard when I went to England that, you know, you're on a 9-month waiting list for a hysterectomy, you better hope you don't bleed to death before you get there. And then again, maybe you want to bleed almost to death because then you get surgery. But for elective surgeries, you know, there's waiting lists. Say, you know, it's a little graphic, man, but if your uterus is hanging in places that you don't want it, but you're not terminally ill with it, you'd be on a waiting list. And so we really have healthcare options unlimited here. And that's why we're here, right? So this, I haven't looked at this, but I'm sure it's got things on insurance, dentists, what about pain, individual versus group practice, chiropractic, malpractice, being skeptical about medical advertising. Can you protect yourself? All kinds of different things in this book, too. So, medicine. 75% of my surveyed people take at least one prescription drug, and 20% of those take another. Actually, I probably figured that percentage out wrong. 20% of the whole group actually takes more than one prescription drug regularly. Over-the-counter.
Older group, though.
That's just this group.
Yeah, well, that's an older group.
Mm-hmm. That's what we're working on. So I'm in the 25% that doesn't take any because I don't have any prescription drugs. Over-the-counter drugs, 48% had taken some in the last 24 hours. So that's 24 hours of just arriving at camp. 80% had taken some in the last week, and 80% had taken some more than 2 weeks. And so that's 20% that don't use over-the-counter drugs. I think that's great. That's super. We already mentioned the tobacco issue in that we're not using tobaccos. Alcohol, which I include these things as drugs. They're putting things in your body that alter normal functions. Alcohol use is 75% no, 25% yes. Those of you who said yes, I know if it was my mother, she went to the hospital to have her hysterectomy and took her vodka in vitamin C bottles. I've never found a patient that's done that, but I'm sure that I've had one. I'm not sure. In a way, it's good, though. It prevented her from going into DTs, which is much worse. But those of you who have brought your alcohol with you, whatever, those of you who haven't, that do drink regularly, I'd like you just to pay attention to your bodies the next few days as you've not had any. Just listen to your bodies. My husband was an ex-husband now, but when we were married, he was an evening beer drinker and not getting drunk. He did that for the first few years we were married, and after he started having to clean up his own messes, he changed his style. But he had prostate problem. Doctor told him no sugar, no alcohol, and regular sitz baths and regular sex. Well, he got part of that accomplished, but no alcohol was the main thing. And he hadn't drank for about 2 weeks. And we were sitting at the breakfast table one morning, and he's just going like this. And he says, what's wrong? My hands are shaking. And I didn't think anything about it. And I thought, well, you know, it's been 2 weeks since you've had a drink. I says, your body is going through alcohol withdrawal. And he goes, no, I don't believe that, you know. But it was the truth. Your body gets used to whatever you give it to. You know, you give it the water, it's going to get used to it. And you'll find yourself, as I am right now, because I drank really well yesterday, I'm thirsty today because my body's telling me you're not giving me enough. And so my body's gotten used to water, where those of you who don't drink much water, you may not recognize your thirst. Or you may, like I was, recognize it as hunger, and I would eat when I was thirsty. So your body recognizes that you're not giving it alcohol, whether it be a glass of wine with dinner or two beers a night, a fly in your eye, and it recognizes that. And it's going to go through a little change. And it can go through full-blown DTs where you're seeing bugs on the wall. And it's really a pain for nurses if you come into the hospital. So if you do decide to come in, don't drink 7 days or more before you come in if you're a teetotaler and do that. It's hard on the patients.
Isn't that true, too, with vitamin C, that if you take too much vitamin C, that your body gets used to throwing it away? And so you run into a problem when
you quit taking it, then you can get like drug-induced scurvy.
They discovered that with children that were born of mothers that were taking too much vitamin C.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's still accurate, but there was a study showing that the babies, the infants, got scurvy.
Yeah, because they're so used to a high level. And if you do any mega dose on vitamins, same thing. If you're going to do it, you need to continue to do it or wean yourself down from it because your body gets used to it. It's like taking prednisone. Has anybody ever been on cortisone or prednisone? Your body makes cortisone. Cortisone is not a foreign drug to your body. But when you take more of it, it shuts down your body's makers. So that's why the doctor always takes you down off of it slowly, because if he dropped you off of it, he'd throw you into the opposite reaction. So that's one of those things. And it's, you know, it can be that way with most medicines. You're going to build up a blood level of it and then bring it down slowly. Sometimes you take one pain pill and it doesn't help and you say, this doesn't work. Same thing building up. Try two or three doses every 4 hours and then you get the relief you need. And then you can hold it up there. Sometimes even with minor drugs, even with Tylenol or, you know, to boost it and keep it up there. Names of drugs, that's always a big one now because drugs are all changing their names. You know, they're going to, used to be Tylenol Company made Tylenol, that was it. Now it's acetaminophen because anybody can make Tylenol. And I know all these books are going to crash on the floor if I write on this board, so I'm going to save the noise. So, give me some names of over-the-counter drugs that you know the name of, and or, you know, either name.
Anacin.
Oh! Sorry! Okay, Anacin.
Advil.
Clarotrimetan. Okay. Okay.
Acetaminophen.
I heard Motrin,
ibuprofen.
And all the different forms of Tylenol.
Aspirin. Aspirin, I'm abbreviating ASA. Okay. Actually, I know I should do that.
Sudafed.
Benadryl. Zantac.
Zantac prescription. I heard another one. Tylenol.
Advil.
Indrol is a prescription.
Well, you're talking about over the counter.
Yeah, over the counter is what I want now.
Advil.
That's not a drug. Oh, I'm at a musical, and then we got the opposite kind of ammonium.
But
try a medicine.
Okay, that's a pretty good, thing. Contact? Any others that you're curious about that you want to play with today? Okay.
Carsey.
Oh, yeah.
I can spend an hour
picking out easy.
Picking out a
cold medicine.
And I can never find the one I want. Okay, what's this one the same of that's on the board?
Acetaminophen.
Yeah.
One and the same drug. Tylenol is a company name, acetaminophen is a generic name. There's also another one that is actually a derivative, or actually it's the prodromal of it, but it is you see that in some of the older drugs. Phenacetin, same thing, like APC,
yeah.
Aspirin, phenacetin.
Ibuprofen is the same.
Okay, so what's ibuprofen the same as?
Motrin,
Advil. Okay, so ibuprofen is the main drug. Advil is your brand name. Motrin, actually I shouldn't put it up. Motrin is your prescription drug. Anybody have a bottle of Advil with them?
What's they for?
Pain reliever. First pain reliever known was aspirin. Then we got Tylenol. Aspirin's by the getting rid of by the kidneys. I think it's good to know that. Tylenol's gotten rid of by the liver. So have you heard your grandkids get into your pills? Which one's worse to overdose on? Tylenol. You cannot detoxify the liver as fast as you can flush something through the kidneys. So Tylenol is much worse, and what are we giving the kids? Tylenol. So you really want to make sure your dosages are right, and you don't want them. My kids hated liquid Tylenol. They hated tablet Tylenol. So I guess the company made it that way for a reason, because my kids would never have overdosed. I could never get it down them. So this was like, you know, the first pain reliever back when I was a kid. All there ever was aspirin. And then Tylenol came out. And then you came out with your ibuprofen. And your ibuprofen, aspirin, and Tylenol will all work for fevers. They'll all work for an anti-inflammatory, like to decrease arthritis, except Tylenol is usually the least effective. It's not as much of an anti-inflammatory to decrease the inflammation, but it will some.
But it's easier on the stomach.
It's easier on the stomach than the other two, absolutely.
Where does Anacin
go?
Yeah, what's Anacin
got in? Somebody got an Anacin bottle with them? Is it aspirin?
I think
or is it Tylenol? I think there is an aspirin-free Anacin. So I think they've built aspirin with Tylenol and with aspirin, or with acetaminophen and with aspirin, and I think there's another drugs, other little drugs in with it.
Caffeine is in Anacin.
Caffeine is in it, okay.
That's supposed to be more effective or stronger for pain relief than aspirin, is it?
They think maybe that the caffeine is going to stimulate it more. I think whatever you believe, you know, when I was a kid, I got a really bad headache for about 2 days, 2 or 3 days, I remember. You know, I never thought anybody could have a headache like that, but I did. And I knew the only thing that would work for me was bare aspirin. And I took Norgesic aspirin, and it didn't help. So it could have been my belief system. It also could have been. I know in chemistry we tested different types of aspirin for their composition, and actually they did react a little differently. So if you find one type works a little better for you, it may.
Stick with it.
Yeah, it may work better. But then again, buy the cheapest brand possible, because they're probably all the same thing. Same thing with vitamins. You know, they say, you know, and people will argue that point too, and sometimes I buy the health vitamins, and sometimes I buy the others. Well, some of them are taken from natural derivative vitamins. Some of them are chemical compositions. And try one, try the other, see which one you like best. If you want to pay $20 instead of $2, that's okay. You know, it's up to you. My favorite cold medicine, I put all these on this side because these are all basically cold medicines. They're going to have, what's the worst? What's the symptom that you like to get rid of the most? when you have a cold. Okay, so congestion. So then you get the advertisement is,
well, why do you buy the one with the cough medicine in it then? Or why do you buy the one with the pain reliever in it then?
That's absolutely true. You know, why put a lot of drugs in your body that you don't need? Oh, well, I'll take this one because it'll cover all the bases. It's also more expensive. I go and I read the labels. And cold medicines change all the time because some of them have Tylenol in them. Some of them are straight antihistamine. Your chlortrimeton and your Benadryl. Benadryl used to be RX, it's now over the counter, same drug.
Sudafed, you can drive your car though.
Sudafed would make me be jumping from the clock tower if there was one, because it makes my heart race about 120 beats a minute.
Oh, wow.
So be real careful with Sudafed. It also, if you have any potential for any blood pressure changes, it can raise blood pressure too. So I like to be careful with Sudafed. Actifed is similar to the Sudafed, a little bit different generic. Corsin is a combo. These are usually, I'm not sure about the Actifed, but I think it may be a combo drug. The Sudafed is a single drug. It's pseudoephedrine. And some NyQuil can, I can tell you my NyQuil story. NyQuil makes me sleep. It's got alcohol in it. I don't drink. And it makes me sleep. I take NyQuil, I can go to sleep, I can breathe, and I can wake up in the morning and feel good. That's my symptom I like to get rid of the most. I went to England, and we were taking the red-eye flight, and I decided I'm sleeping on the plane. I'm going to take my NyQuil and sleep on the plane. Well, instead of putting me to sleep, the Sudafed in it kicked in, and I go... And I did that for about 12 hours, and I did not carry my second dose of Sudafed around with me for 2 weeks. I threw it away when I got to England, because I brought one for the trip home, too. But that's my NyQuil story. So NyQuil has Sudafed in it, and I think they may make one that doesn't now, because they're changing NyQuil around a little bit, too. And then, you know, the daycare would not probably have the alcohol in it, and it may have more Sudafed. Because it will keep them more awake.
But if you just want the alcohol, why don't you take a drink?
Well, because it did clear my nose. I don't know if it was the alcohol or the nose stuff.
Does Benadryl wire you like that?
Benadryl can act as a sedative or it can wire you. It can have either effect. It's straight antihistamine.
Some people that take these go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Me, yeah. I take them. I can't take any cold medication at night because if I do, I'm going to be awake all night long. They just
antihistamines will work either way in certain
one
people.
Time it does the one extreme and the other.
Probably just depends on your chemistry for the day. Yeah. Contact is another combination drug. I like Dristan. Dristan seems to work the best for me, but I don't want to pay Dristan's price. Dristan's been around for a long time. You'd think it'd be real cheap. So what I look for is the one that's closest to Dristan. And what you need to do is find one that works for you. Like, say Contact works for you. You like it, go and look at your Skaggs Alpha Beta or whatever your generic brand is. Read the ingredients. It says phenylephrine, 5 milligrams, chlorpheniramine maleate, which is my favorite antihistamine, which is chlortrimeton. And it says 2 milligrams, and Tylenol, 325, which is one Tylenol tablet. So it's like I look at the brand I like, and then I find the generic that's the same, and it's cheaper, a lot cheaper. In fact, this one was on sale. It was normally $409, which means Dristan was probably $6-something, and I got it for $249. Mm-hmm. That was a good deal. I bought three of them.
How about the factor of it being available for your body? It doesn't. They don't have to. The generic people do not have to test out the drug, whereas the
but they have to use the same formulas. They couldn't sell them under the brand name, under the same name, if they're going to be a lot different.
It can be a different one.
Yeah.
How do you account for the fact that some of these drugs, chlorpheniramine for one, and what was the other one you
Benadryl.
Had, RX, Benadryl, used to be a prescription, and then all of a sudden you could buy them over the counter?
They just realize what, okay, same thing here with Motrin. Did anybody have an Advil bottle with them or ibuprofen bottle with them? I'm curious of the milligrams on the bottle. Nobody brought any?
It's usually the strength.
The strength is the milligrams. And usually it's 100 milligrams or 200 milligrams. Motrin is 400 to 800. You know what my favorite surgeon, the one who did my gallbladder, you know what he does to save his patients money? First thing he does too is he gives them Marie Siegel's book before they come in for cancer surgery, which I love. With here, instead of writing them a prescription for Motrin, he says, read your bottle. If it's 200, take 2 to 4. So you can take up to 4 Advil and have, or even 8 of them, you're taking 8 Advil, and then you're getting the prescription strength for Motrin. Not that it's any better for you, but you don't need to go buy the expensive prescription for Motrin, which I read in this book that I just breezed through today, was they're making $1.5 million on Motrin.
Per year,
because it's prescription. Yeah, there was, and you know, you're just spending a lot more money for the same drugs. So I was pure ibuprofen. Now they're coming out with a little bit different ones, and maybe it'll agree with your stomach a little better, or maybe it'll relieve your pain a little better because it's formulated just a little differently. But bottom line is, both of them are probably going to eat your stomach out, and then you'll be over here getting, we didn't write down Maalox. Metamucil, you know, read your labels. They've got generics too. Sometimes I like to go with the name brand. Sometimes the name brand will go on sale and it'll be just as cheap as the other. Sometimes the flavor's a little better. Imodium, you've got Imodium and you've got Imodium DM or something, you know. They're all different. There's different reasons why they're there. Sometimes they're longer acting or whatever. Percogesic, I'd have to look up. I'm not sure it's a combination analgesic drug.
The definition I got was it's Tylenol and a mild sedative.
Oh, great.
Probably caffeine, but caffeine's not a sedative.
Doctors seem to like that Tylenol with codeine.
Tylenol with codeine is the cheapest and easiest pain drug there is, basically, and most doctors will order that. They say 90% of hospitals use Tylenol, you're right. You think I'm going to upset somebody's stomach with aspirin if I have a chance? No way. So I pass out Tylenol all the time unless they ask for aspirin. The other thing is that aspirin can work as a blood thinner. How many take an aspirin a day as told by their doctor to keep their little platelets slippery so they don't get clots? Yeah.
Well, what about a baby?
Even a baby aspirin a day.
One-fourth.
They say you just a quarter of them.
Yeah.
I take a fourth.
So if you want to get them the easy way, you know, buy your generic baby aspirins and take one baby aspirin.
Diabetic needs to be careful taking aspirin.
Mm-hmm.
Why? The blood vessels in your eyes tend to hemorrhage if you're diabetic. Aspirin's a blood vessel in the blood vessel. A blood thinner.
Is there aspirin in chloracetin?
You'd have to read the label. I think there might be.
Because we had a weird story of a close friend who thought he was getting a cold and used chloracetin very successfully numerous times, and all of a sudden after he'd been taking it for a few days, he kicked up an old ulcer and ended up in the hospital with a bleeding ulcer, and he really lost blood, and it was attributed to taking chloracetin for a cold.
Salicylic.
Thank you.
Acetylsalicylic.
You want to know these names, because if you don't know that acetylsalicylic acid is aspirin, you don't know what's in these drugs. It's not going to say aspirin. It's not going to say bear. No. If you don't know what acetaminophen is, Tylenol, you don't know what's in your drugs. Get educated. You let the doctor be the god here and say, take these pills. Poof. And I shared the first day. You come in, you give me your pills, you know. Oh, what medicines are you on? Well, I take a little yellow one for my heart, and I take a little water pill. And I only take my little red and black one if I feel like I need it. And I'm saving money on this one because I know my heart's okay and I didn't take my calcium gluconate. And they wouldn't know the name. I didn't take my big white one that I'm supposed to take with meals. That was my dad. Oh, I don't need 5 a day. I only need 3. It's like, Dad, you need the blood level of 5, you know. So So there's a reason why it's prescribed for the amount that it's prescribed. What time you got?
4:27.
You want to take a mini break? And then what I'd like to do is when we come back is to get into four groups. And I've got two books that I'd like you to look up a medicine in, one of your medicines that you brought in. And if you don't find that one, because it's such a new drug, use one that you've heard of or one that somebody else might have. And I'll have the instructions of what you need to do with that written on the board. And the other two groups, I'd like one person in each of the four groups to be like a note taker so we can kind of compare stuff. But I'd like you to say, you know, what works best for home remedies, when you take over-the-counter drugs, and then we'll switch so that, because then my two books can go to the other two groups and we'll do a little work on that. And just get a little information on the medicines and see if you find out something you didn't know about a medicine that you have taken or that you are taking.
Before we adjourn for the moment, could you give me any information about the freshness of the drug? I had a doctor tell me to use the cheapest aspirin because it sells faster and it's fresher.
There's an expiration dates on your bottles. I was the camp nurse at Camp Seneca, the campfire camp that I talked about a little earlier. One year when my sister was going to be the nurse, and I went up there and they had all this stuff that was outdated, and I was just appalled, you know. And I was throwing away all this stuff, and I told Hutt, you know, Hutt's the director, I says, we're going to need more Caladryl, we're going to need more first aid cream and things like that, you know. And I know that she got a little irritated with me because they are financially, you know, strapped group. And but there's a reason why those dates are on there, and maybe the life of them is good after that. Maybe it isn't.
Well, shortly after, I think it's okay.
They might be
much beyond that.
They might be making money of putting shorter dates on them, but you know, I think the FDA probably controls that a little bit too. And then I was up there this year in relief nurse for 3 days, and I went through stuff that I knew was there 3 years ago when I was there, and I never noticed it. Like the bottle of antiseptic Betadine was 1987, you know, and things like that. So I think just your bottle of aspirins, boxes of them, have the expiration dates on them. So again, you know, if one brand of aspirin works okay for you, use it. I get my 99 cent bottles at the hospital now because I get cost plus 10%, and it is the cheapest brand, and it's it's not Bayer anymore.
In regard to that, I've talked to the druggist about the how strict you need to be to the expiration date on medication. With some drugs, not all necessarily, but with some, after a certain period of time, they break down and they become another
drug
that can be more hazardous than helpful, mm-hmm. and so that's the reason for it.
Now, your prescription drugs are a little different because your prescription drugs, they will always date a year from when you got the prescription. That may or may not be the expiration date on that drug. So if it's something you know you're going to have for a couple of years when you get it, ask the doctor, say, like if it's a once in a while for a migraine or something, ask the pharmacist, say, could you look on the big bottle and tell me the real expiration date of this bottle of pills? I know that my prescription will expire within a year, but if I have more left, and that would be the only way you would really know if that went beyond that.
That's a good suggestion.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the production bottle, they give you the date.
Mm-hmm. But you see, if you're getting a prescription filled out
in
a
pill bottle,
yeah,
like
hold
yours up there,
you don't get all that information.
Yeah, all you get is your label, and on your label, you'll notice your expiration date is probably 1 year from when you got your pills.
Yeah.
Unless it's sooner, then they put it on there for sooner. So, let's just take a little mini break. There is a bathroom down the end of this hall if you haven't found it, if you need it. Otherwise, just stretch and wiggle. Let's put the chairs in four groups.
What is the author?
She didn't want to go to the doctor in California and pay a lot of money. She didn't have insurance. So she went to the health store and she found out what worked for bladder infections. And it worked for her, as well as drinking a lot of water and whatever
cranberry juice.
The bladder does not like, the bugs in the bladder don't like acid. So anything acidic that you drink, vitamin C, cranberry juice, makes the urine acidic and the germs don't grow as well.
Oh.
Yes, Diane.
Well, water is your best drink for almost everything.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem like it's good to suppress symptoms that your body is using to cleanse
right.
itself. And you suppress it like runny nose, whatever.
Okay.
You know, I mean, that's
That's true. Did everybody hear Diane with that? We've got a cold. So Louise says here, cold is confusion and like we're not resting and take, any time you get a cold, look back and go, God, did I just go through a bunch of confusion? It's 99% true for me. And that's what I was reading in Louise's book here. People that have used this chart in here, hindsight, you know, looking back at it, says it's not every mental equivalent is 100% true for everyone. However, it does give us a point of reference to begin our search for the cause of dis-ease. Many people working in the alternative healing therapies use Heal Your Body all the time with their clients and find out that the mental causes run 90 to 95% true. Mm-hmm. That our resistance goes down because we're mentally diseasing, and so we're going to cause a physical diseasing. So,
you know, there are a lot of studies to show that people who undergo a lot of stress after they found out they had cancer, like if they check back the year and 2 years before, they suffered a lot of stresses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there are just so many studies now that, you know, that may even include why you're open to getting cancer at times. Mm-hmm. I know the scientific community just, you know, shivers at that kind of thought.
They're opening up, though. Look at what Diane shared today. And as far as new theories and new laws, I bought a book after I met Maria. Her aunt had, she had bought this book when she was staying with her aunt in California. And it's called A Psychic Dictionary, or no, A Psychic Encyclopedia. And it's the most phenomenal book. There's things in there that I read that are absolutely, totally interesting. Different laws. It reminded me when Diane was talking about the laws, the physics laws. There's psychic laws that go through the same thing. And there's more and more coming around that is proving that this mental work is true. It is concrete. It is something that can be done and worked on.
You know, one thing that's bugged our family, Phil has always had allergies and he's had asthma since a child. And some doctors will not acknowledge that allergies exist.
Yeah.
And that really riles us because we have a story that proves that we used to go and play bridge with a certain couple several times a year. Every time we went, within 15 minutes of being in their living room, Phil would start congesting so that he couldn't breathe and mm-hmm. he would have to take more medication. It wasn't until we had been doing this over a period of time that we learned that they had a dog. And that dog had the run of the house when we weren't there. He was out of sight. We didn't hear him bark. We didn't even know he existed while we were there. And when we found that out, he had had a previous experience where we were in an environment where there were dogs, and within half an hour he couldn't even stay to eat his meal because he could hardly breathe. He had to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And now you can't tell me that that is all in your head. When this reaction came when he didn't even know they had a dog.
Mm-hmm.
Not all dogs do it to him, but
yeah.
some dogs do.
I'm that way with cats, but
our children are that, two of our children are that way with cats. His brother is that way with cats.
I was a lot more allergic when I was younger. And when I started developing this mindset, I just threw into my mind that I'm healing my allergies. I did take allergy shots for about, I probably did 6 doses because I'd forget to do them and I didn't like giving myself shots and so I quit doing it. But and that might have sensitized me a little bit also, but I did not go through a full treatment at all. But I made the affirmation that my allergies are healing. If you have hay, well, my hay fever's healing. I'm healing it. And my allergies have gotten remarkably better. I used to be really bad in the spring when everything started doing its thing. Sometimes still if I get out and ryegrass, or I had a person's house I went to and I sat where the cat sat, I couldn't, you know, my eyes and itch was itching and running and knowing really bad. But I believe that I can heal that, and I believe that you could heal your allergies too. And asthma, just to read here in Louise, smother love. Inability to breathe for oneself, feeling stifled and suppressed, and suppressed crying. And that can come from the day we're born. All these old stuff can come from the day we're born, and some people can believe that it may even come from a past life. Now that's just thrown out there. You don't have to own it. But it, you know, the point is, you still have the power to heal it. God does not have you inherit sickness. And I believe that we have God's power within each and every one of us to heal any sickness.
But you know, you tread on real dangerous grounds there, because you have some of these religious groups.
I know that.
That just do not believe in any kind of medicine. And occasionally they let their children die,
right.
Mm-hmm. When they could have been helped.
That's what I said the other day. God put doctors on this earth too. He put intelligence on this earth for people to learn and teach others.
That's right.
You know, we have to look at all avenues.
I think you can do a lot with exercise relating to even allergies for a lot of people and that kind of thing.
Yeah, food, I don't
diet,
know if
and health.
Exercise anymore.
But on the other side, I think there's some very physical things related to the allergies that, you know,
mm-hmm.
you might lower the symptoms and all that kind of stuff, but a lot of people still have it. And I think you kind of have to combine with your medical knowledge and make
you have to use all avenues. Every one of them.
Yeah. Well, I've never had allergies until we moved to Arizona. And if you haven't had them before you move there, you'll get them.
Well,
you
lived in Minnesota.
That's a good state.
A
good, clean place.
Here's your positive affirmation for allergies. You want to jot it down.
Is that, now which book is
this
that?
This is for allergies. This is in Louise Hayes, You Can Heal Your Life.
I got that written down. Okay.
Allergies is, this is your positive affirmation. Whether you want to take it or leave it, it's not going to hurt you to say it every day. The world is safe and friendly. I am safe. I am at peace with life. Try it. Come back in 5 years. Write me a letter in 5 years. You got my address. And tell me if your allergies are healed or not.
Well, you know, it's going to take 5 years for me to have
No, no. Well, I don't know. How far did you say you were going to live?
Oh, longer than five.
All you have to do to get rid of a stuffy nose and a head where you can't breathe is to say, allergies are safe and friendly.
No, not allergies. Hi. The world. It was the world is safe and friendly.
The world is safe. That's all you have to do to get rid of that.
If that's what's causing it.
I don't have a stuffy nose.
It's a lot cheaper.
Ruth says you have to believe it.
You don't have to believe it.
No, you don't have to believe it.
No, you don't have to believe it.
Your subconscious doesn't know.
I shared with a few of you after I left class Tuesday. It was a very vulnerable time for me because I said a lot of things that I was afraid you could all throw eggs at me for. And I've never dealt with a large group of people with different religious beliefs than mine in this capacity. And I've been having, had been having up until that time, horrendous stomach cramps and feeling like maybe it was hunger, maybe it was gas, maybe it was too much granola, whatever. And I thought, well, I'm going to look here and see what Louise says about stomach. Dread. Fear of the new, inability to assimilate the new. It's like, okay, well, how about gas pains? Gas pains here. Gripping, fear, undigested ideas. It's like, all right, Louise, you know. So I had ice cream and Diet Coke that night, and three times that night I woke up and I felt the gas moving around and I knew it was going to come out. And I haven't had any gas pains since. But it was just acknowledging that I wasn't blaming it on the food. I was assimilating it in my own mental stuff. It's like I can digest life easily. And
but
work
some,
through that.
Some food just doesn't digest very good with you, you know. And sometimes you don't even know it.
What if it was the only food you had to eat?
Well,
you think you could get to it so you would agree with it?
Mm-hmm. All I know is that I think I have a cast iron constitution in terms of food, but there's sometimes when you eat certain things and it just stays with you all night and you realize
maybe you weren't supposed to eat that much or that food at that
time. Of that kind of food.
Maybe you didn't listen to your body and just eat what you wanted.
Yeah.
It's just some new ideas, and I've found that they work for me, and no, I don't use them all the time. Yeah, do I take cold remedies? Yeah, I do that. Do I really notice that I do need to rest, you know, and I get sick, and it's like, I don't like being sick, you know, and I've never had that person there to take care of me, and now that I'm single, I have it even less. Not really. I had to qualify that because my husband was not a good, you know, I always feel guilty asking for something because I'm laying on the couch feeling like, who knows what, and will you water, will you make sure the lawn's watered? Will you make sure that, you know, the kids have clothes for tomorrow? And, you know, you feel guilty because you're giving up, you know, your stuff that you're supposed to be doing, and you know they don't want to do it, and then they do it with, you know, they give you that, and it's like, should I know, should I ask for the first place, you know?
So
you can develop that relationship so that, you know, you can serve one another and love one another and help each other out. So it's like, I need rest today, and take that rest and take it for you, because your body's telling you something. Listen to your body. Affirm what you want, positive. Even if you don't know what Louise's book says, you don't have it with you, you don't believe in it or whatever, it's like, I have a stomach ache. Well, I digest life easily and I love myself. You know, you can just about make them up. You can just about make them up.